This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Acuron Corn Herbicide from Syngenta, an upgrade for growers who don't settle for average. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Hurricane Michael made landfall about 24 hours ago, and that storm is already dumping rain in the Carolinas this morning. E15 messaging is in overdrive. And we're less than an hour away from updated crop estimates from USDA. We've got it all covered for you on today's AgriTalk.
From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk, agriculture's national talk show since 1994. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us again this morning. Welcome to AgriTalk. Jeff Cooper, he's the new president and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, but he's not new to the messaging from the anti-ethanol groups out there. And I'd say he's not very happy with some of the propaganda that's being spread by groups like the American Petroleum Institute, the petrochemical manufacturers. But he should be encouraged by a new effort from a major convenience chain to make E15 available to more consumers. We'll talk with Jeff this morning about the latest happenings in the biofuel industry. And an already soggy Southeast U.S. is getting hammered with rains this morning as Hurricane Michael spins up the East Coast. This is the second storm that North Carolina has had to deal with this fall. How are farmers dealing with the flooding and the storm damage? We'll hear from North Carolina Farm Bureau President Larry Wooten at the bottom of the hour. And yes, when field conditions improve in the Western Corn Belt, priority one will be getting crops out of the field. But the fall of the year is when you also need to be getting ready for next spring. We'll talk with Caitlin Bissonette from the University of Missouri about some of the things that you should be doing this fall to get ready for next year. And, of course, we want you to be part of the conversation today. Give us a call. It's 855-4-TALK-AG. That's 855-482-5524. If you'd rather let us know what you're thinking via Twitter, just include hashtag AgriTalk so that I will be sure to see it. Right now, let's turn it over to Betsy Gibbon, get an update on the news. How are you this morning, Betsy?
I'm doing all right, Chip. How are you?
Good, good, good. We're less than an hour away from the crop production supply and demand reports.
Well, that's my top story, too. Should we go right to it?
You bet. Let's hit it.
Well, grain markets mostly in the red this morning before USDA releases a bevy of reports in just about an hour. Yeah. The department is set to release both its WASD and crop production reports, and we'll see if both corn and soybeans could still potentially produce the highest yield on record in the top producing states. Now, U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan visited Matt Bennett with Bennett Consulting on his farm in Illinois, and Bennett is breaking down his pre-report analysis.
I think the report that's coming here, you're probably going to see the corn go up a little bit as far as yield's concerned, but I don't think it's going to be a whole lot. I would expect to be under 182. Maybe a 181.7 or 8 is about where I'm going to be. As far as soybeans go, though, I think you go up a bushel and a half. I think that you could go up quite a bit with regards to soybeans.
Now, Chip, I'm interested to hear your take because as you've talked about, we've had sloppy weather since late September in the Western Corn Belt. Now we have snow in those areas, stunted beans, we have rain, we have flooding, we have Michael in the Southeast. What's your take on all of this when weather woes may not even show up in the report? Does the market even care?
Exactly, Betsy. Exactly. The conditions that a harvest-ready corn and soybean crop, and maybe especially soybeans, The weather problems that we've had since October 1, because these production estimates are going to be as of October 1. But think about what these crops have been through.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm not going to disagree with Matt. As of October 1, we probably are looking at an increase in the national average corn and soybean yields from September. But when we get this November estimate, and it does take into account some of the weather issues that we've had to deal with in the Western Corn Belt, that could be the report that we see a bit of a downtick in these yield estimates.
Mm-hmm. When does USDA get this surveyed if it's as of October 1?
Yeah. Do you know? Yeah, they'll start surveying about 10 days before before October 1, and they will continue to bring in information for Yeah, they'll take in as much information as they possibly can, but everything is dated back to September 1. Okay. But they start about 10 days before the end of the month.
But man, it's going to be an interesting report. Yeah. Both of them, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously it's going to have a big impact on what these markets do here over the next 30 days.
And of course, I have to mention Michael made landfall. As you said, it's now heading into the Carolinas. I talked with Jimmy Webb, who lives over in southern Georgia, by Leary, Georgia. He had 100-mile-per-hour winds. He messaged me last night, said he's scouting some fields today. So you have to think about those guys down there.
Yeah, we're going to be talking with Larry Wooten, president of the North Carolina Farm Bureau, at the bottom of the hour. After Hurricane Florence blew through, you know, it was 4 or 5 days after the rain stopped falling before the floodwaters peaked, mm-hmm. or crested. Mm-hmm. And people kind of forgot about that, you know, yeah, the rain stopped, but it got worse after the rain stopped down there, Betsy. They had a lot of issues that they had to deal with.
Well, I guess I don't know what to say.
Yeah. Yeah, it tough situation, but you know, they're farmers.
Yep, that's right.
Deal with it, move on.
Right?
That's exactly right. Okay, Betsy, thanks.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, let's bring in Greg Henderson. Greg is the editorial director at Drovers. How you doing this morning, Greg?
I'm great, Chip. How are you?
Good, good, good. Hey, you know, one of the bright spots that we continue to talk about in agriculture is the meat exports. Whether we're talking about pork exports, beef exports, they're all good right now. But boy, these beef exports, it's really a shining spot for the industry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, August export value topped $750 million, Chip, for the first time in a month. That leaves us on pace to reach $8 billion in beef exports, which, you know, it would be a record, obviously, but that's an incredible number. Just looking at percentage of the total beef production, over 13% of our total beef production right now is being exported. So, you know, this new trade agreement looks like it could help, especially pork and poultry, maybe a modest gain for beef. You know, of course, all the I's and T's are not dotted and crossed right there yet, Chip. We don't know exactly what's going to happen. And also, we would note that the retaliatory duties imposed by Mexico on by Canada, on U.S. prepared cooked beef product remains in place. They need to get that solved. But overall outlook, just excellent for beef exports.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, what's the net trade balance on beef? Because I know we import a fair amount of beef as well.
We do import a fair amount of beef. We export 13%. Right now, the amount of imports coming in amount to about 10% of our product, 3 billion pounds, and we're going to produce about 30 billion pounds in this country right now. We need to remember, though, as we look at that the dollar balance is exceedingly for the exports. We're exporting, you know, much higher value cuts, and what's coming in is much lower value. A lot of that's going into the hamburger market.
Right, straight into the hamburger market. All right, Greg, thanks, buddy. Hey,
thank you, Chip.
Do you feel better about your Smirnoff now?
Yes, absolutely.
It's GMO-free, man.
It's GMO-free.
You guys have got to check out Greg's take on Smirnoff's latest marketing efforts behind its vodka. It's spot on from Greg. All right, we got Jeff Cooper, president of the RFA, up next.
When a silent thief is robbing the country's crops of higher yields, it'll take a bold step to bring balance and restore hope. This season, find out how far one granule will go to unlock the potential of soybean plants.
You know, Jim, it'll take a miracle to give these fields the boron they need for the full season.
Presenting the true story of three powerful elements joining forces to maximize soybean yields.
Jim, our retailer recommended Aspire. It combines potassium with not one, but two forms of boron.
This season and all season, get ready for full crop potential when Aspire presents growing beyond the outer limits. From the Mosaic Company, the maker of Micro Essentials and K-Meg, now available in retailers. We will not spoil the ending, but your retailer or AspireBoron.com will.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a Channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
I've got Don Porter, herbicide technical product head for Syngenta, here with me today. Don, with the corn harvest underway, what are some of the things that our listeners should be looking for from the cab of the combine as they start to evaluate their inputs for next season?
Yeah, thanks, Chip. The main thing I tell farmers to look for from the cab of the combine is whether or not there are any weed escapes, and if so, what are those weeds? Escape weeds could mean a couple of different things. You may have a population of herbicide-resistant weeds, and the best there would be to speak with your local agronomist or crop consultant, and they should be able to help review the program that was conducted in 2018 and what potential changes might be needed for the 2019 season. Most likely will mean making sure your overlapping residual herbicides that contain 2.5 or more effective sites of action on those key troublesome weeds. Also, you may need to upgrade your corn herbicide program in 2019 to one that provides longer lasting residual weed control on these tough weeds. Yeah. Not all herbicides are created equal, and many times you get what you pay for. So cutting those costs up front may end up costing yield potential in the end.
Yeah, Don, I think the message about overlapping the residuals is starting to get out there. At least I know it is in the Midwest, but we need to focus on that to get effective weed control, correct?
Absolutely. It's not only effective weed control, but it is also about preserving the active ingredients that we have today in the toolbox, and with those multiple effective sites of action working on those weeds, you have great chance of improved weed control, plus heading off or delaying resistance issues.
Excellent. That was Don Porter with Syngenta with insights on how to use your combine cab to inform your weed management plan for next season.
Maximize your grain quality, yield, and profit this season with ProSaro Fungicide from Bayer.
Here with another episode of John Deere Lead TV, I'm with Scott Shadler. We're in a demonstration plot talking about
corn.
And what are we looking at in the plot?
Talk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We had some good news on E15, and the ethanol industry has been pushing for E15 availability, year-round availability for quite some time. Let's bring in Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, to talk about it. Jeff, how are you this morning?
Doing great, Chip. How are you?
Good, good, good. You settling into the new role there at RFA?
Yeah, I think you could say that I hit the ground running, and
yeah.
within my first week, we got the announcement from President Trump, so I guess I'm off to a good start, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, when the starting pistol fires, Jeff, you better get running.
You got it.
Exactly. Okay, it is good news, no question about it. But go to the bottom line on this, Jeff. What does it mean? How much more demand does this create, do you think?
Sure. Well, it is a longer-term play, Chip, and,
yep.
and I think there's pretty broad recognition of that across the industry. But it's one of those things that had to happen. It's one of those barriers that had to be knocked down before we can really jumpstart the marketplace for higher level blends and E15 specifically. So this has been one of our top regulatory priorities for a number of years. We're not out of the woods yet. This announcement really just starts the process to get the rulemaking done, and EPA has committed to having it done in time for next summer. So hopefully we can put all of this behind us by June 1 next year. And, you know, hopefully we'll see the marketplace making E15 available all year round next year.
Yeah, and I like the way that you said it, Jeff. This is an issue that had to be knocked down because it brought up a memory of the blend wall and how we faced that blend wall to get to 15 billion gallons blended into the fuel supply out there. But this helps us get to that level, doesn't it?
It does, and again, it's one of those constraints or barriers that's been put on ethanol, and it's really a remnant of a 30-year-old regulation, and so, you know, this fits the mold very well of the types of burdensome and unnecessary regulations that really offer no environmental or economic benefit that President Trump has committed to repealing. So we knew it was ripe for the picking. And we've been working with the administration really for since President Trump won the election to get this done. And again, it's a very positive signal to the marketplace, and I think it will shake loose some investment that's been sitting on the sidelines, and it will pique some more interest in the retail sector. It's not going to bring another billion or 2 billion gallons of demand online overnight, and it's not going to help us grind another 300 or 400 or 500 million bushels of corn overnight, but it does help pave the path forward to getting to those types of demand numbers.
Right. And, you know, Jeff, I think it's important for everybody that's listening to understand that all this does is create more choice, another choice for consumers. It's not like E10 is going to disappear. It's not like regular unleaded gasoline is going to disappear. E10 will be another choice year round now.
Absolutely. This is not and has never been about mandating E15.
Right.
This has been about allowing consumers and allowing retailers the choice to offer that fuel. And you know, in a, we always hear about, oh, you know, if we only had a free market, and yeah, why do you guys need the RFS? And if your product is so great, it would compete in the free market. This move by President Trump helps move us more toward a free market. I mean, we have a product in ethanol that is 80 cents cheaper than gasoline today.
Right.
It's cleaner. It's made in America. It's supporting jobs in rural parts of the country. In a truly free market, our product would get chosen every time. So this move just allows more flexibility for the retail sector, allows more choice for consumers. And, you know, if they don't want to purchase E15, they don't have to. There will certainly be E10 available, and in many cases, there will be E0 will remain available.
Yeah.
If you want to pay an extra 60 cents a gallon for gasoline without ethanol, that's your prerogative.
Yeah, and that price at the pump is one of the most important things, in, at least in my judgment of E15, because it is a it's a premium product, but it comes at a lower cost. Jeff, like you said, if it wasn't for all the anti-ethanol group messaging that's going on out there, it would be the choice for most consumers out there, don't you? I believe that.
Without question. I mean, it's E15 has been 5 to 10 cents cheaper than regular gasoline, E10, where it's being offered. Again, with a little bit of education, consumers who try E15 immediately become repeat customers, and they come back and buy more and make that switch. So I do think we will continue to see that. And now that we can, you know, hopefully alleviate this burden of, you know, putting the brakes on every June 1st and you know, relabeling or taking that product out of the pump. Now that we're, you know, hopefully getting past that, I think E15 will really take off in the years ahead.
Okay, yeah, I think it will too. But what's next? What do we do to get it in front of more consumers?
Well, I mean, there's a couple things that have to happen, and certainly, as I mentioned, this announcement on Tuesday was just the beginning of the rulemaking process. So first and foremost, we've got to get that done, and that means EPA needs to immediately get a proposed rule out to the public and allow the public to comment on that proposal and weigh in with the agency. And then the EPA is required to take all those comments into consideration. There will probably be a hearing or two, and then they've got to get a final rule done. And so none of this matters really until that final rule is complete. And again, we've had commitments that will be done in time, you know, before next June. Right. During that process, we, of course, are going to be continuing to work with retailers, with gasoline marketers to make them aware of this change. Make them aware of the value proposition, and then we'll continue our consumer education campaigns as well. But that works, you know, those campaigns really work hand in hand with the retailers, because that's right. Where, you know, that's the point of sale. That's where consumers are interfacing with our product. So
exactly,
that's what we have in store over the next 6 to 12 months.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, let's set the record straight on some of this messaging out there, because one of the messages that just drives me crazy, Jeff, is, and it's from the American Petroleum Institute, it's from the petrochemical manufacturers, talking about that we're going to have dirtier air burning higher ethanol blends during the summer. Set the record straight.
Well, that drives me nuts as well, and a lot of the news coverage around this announcement has said, well, the reason we haven't been able to sell E15 in the summer is because it's contributes to smog. Yeah. That's ridiculous, and it's untrue. And E15 is less volatile than E10. It contributes fewer evaporative emissions.
Yep.
It reduces carbon monoxide. It reduces carbon dioxide emissions. And so, you know, E15 is absolutely a cleaner fuel than E10 even, and it's certainly cleaner than E0. So that is not the reason that E15 has been held out of the marketplace. The reason is, you know, we've had this 30-year-old antiquated, outdated regulation that was designed at a time when higher level blends were not even really, you know, being contemplated.
Exactly. Jeff, it's just false.
Crazy too.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. We've only got a couple of minutes left, and I got a lot that I want to cover here, Jeff.
Sure.
The other thing, I'm thinking of opening up a shop, because 3/4 of the cars are about to break down, you know, according to the API. Well, you know, why don't consumers take a look at what's going on down in Brazil? I mean, their average blend rate is north of E20, isn't it?
Sure. Yeah, they're about 27-28% in Brazil. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, that's another myth, Chip, that's been around since EPA approved E15 in 2011. And it's just nonsense. We have driven more than 5 billion miles on E15. We haven't heard a single reported case of engine damage or engine failure or inferior performance or any, you know, breakdowns on the side of the road, any of that nonsense. If it had happened, we certainly would have heard about it.
Yeah.
5 billion miles is a lot of miles. This is the most tested fuel in the history of the U.S.
Yep.
So they're just, you know, it's just more nonsense. The other thing I would point out is, nearly every automaker today explicitly approves the use of E15 in their automobiles. You go to any car lot and look at the owner's manual, whether it's a Honda, Toyota, Ford, General Motors, you know, Chrysler, whatever it is, they're all going to list E15 as approved fuel.
Yeah, exactly. Jeff, we got to go, but now that we've got E15, well, don't take your eye off that ball until we get the final rule, but let's move on to the hardship waivers and get that dealt with too, okay? Let's get you back on real soon and talk about that.
That sounds great, Chip. Would love to.
All right. That is Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. We've got Larry Wooten from the North Carolina Farm Bureau up next.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours.
Learn more at prosoro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards. Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted use pesticide.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady joins us now. Brian, we've got big reports coming up here in a half an hour. It just kind of looks like the grains are in a holding pattern in front of those reports.
Yeah, kind of easing into the reports, Chip. We're down about 1 to 2 cents in the corn market and about the same in soybeans right now. So kind of a cautious tone. I think that that's driven by the fact that traders are anticipating bigger crop estimates and bigger carryover projections as well for 2018-19.
Yeah, we were talking earlier in the show with Betsy about how the report is put together, and we got to remind everybody again, these are estimates as of October 1, correct?
They are. So some of the heavy rains and damage and snows and things that may have impacted crops won't be factored in this month. That'll come next month. Also keep in mind that October is when they start incorporating FSA certified acreage data, so that could have an impact. In all likelihood, the soybean yield is going to go up, but we anticipate that harvested acreage will be reduced, and as a result, that may be completely offset, and you may not get a bigger soybean crop estimate, right, even though the yield goes up.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe as much as 500,000 acres coming off the bean crop. Livestock traits, the pressure's back on the hogs. What's going on?
Well, it's definitely not as quiet in the livestock markets this morning, especially hogs, as what it is in the grains. From a technical standpoint, we've tipped over in that market, and we're getting some technical selling as a result. It feels like the futures are undervalued at current levels, but that's not stopping traders from selling them. Funds are getting out of long positions here.
All right, very good. We'll cover the reports for you on Pro Farmer coming up in just a little bit. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip Corey. We've got Larry Woot, president of the North Carolina Farm Bureau, on the line with us. Larry, welcome to AgriTalk. How are you today?
Well, Chip, I'm doing fine. We're glad to be on AgriTalk. Thank you for the call. We just need a little relief from this guy called Michael that seems to be coming up the Gulf Coast, could come into North Carolina later this week with another 5 inches of rain, 5 or 6 inches. One thing we don't need right now is more water.
No question. I'll admit, Larry, I've been complaining about all the rain that we've been getting in Iowa this fall, and we have gotten more than we normally would. But as soon as I got you on the line, I felt a little bit silly about the complaining that I've done. How bad was Florence, Larry? I mean, it just sat over the top of the southeast U.S. and spun for about 48 hours. I can't even imagine it.
It more than 48 hours, about 4 days almost. Yeah. Chip, you just can't believe the devastation from the flood, particularly on our on our agricultural industry down there. We've documented $1.1 billion in ag losses in North Carolina. And I told our legislators yesterday that every penny of it we could account for and more. It just gets worse by the day when you look at some of the devastation from the floods, not wind, but just water rising with the floods, the devastation to the roads, not only the public roads, but the farm roads. It's pretty bad and pretty pathetic in some places when people that didn't have flood insurance, they were 3 miles from a 3 miles from a river and then get 3 feet of water in their home. Poultry houses had, 3 to 4 feet of water in them. They didn't have flood insurance. And there was, just all the equipment, feeders, motors, all underwater. It's just disheartening. Livestock just gone. I know one family that had 130 head of cows. They found 20 alive. They don't know where the others are. I mean, it's just, pretty devastating stories. But, we're going to make it. When you live where we do and stick out in the ocean, that's going to happen from time to time, but certainly doesn't make it any better. But we're going to come back. It's just going to take a little time.
Yeah, and Larry, I think people kind of lost, once the rain stopped falling, people kind of lost track of the story, but the rivers and the flooding really didn't crest until, what was it, a week or 10 days later?
Three, four days afterwards, and okay. That's where the real, and the real thing is on these crops, if any crop goes under, now with all these food safety regulations, any crop that goes under flood water, where you have waters that come in, flood waters, then that crop cannot enter the food chain either for human consumption or livestock consumption. So even cotton that went underwater, the cotton seed can't be used in animal feed. So we've got a real challenge. And this storm, as I said, this storm couldn't have come at a worse time. We had 100% of our soybeans still in the field, 100% of our cotton, 100% of our peanuts, 95% of the sweet potatoes. 50% of the tobacco, all of the tobacco that was left in the field, basically in those impacted counties, is just a zero. So it's, it's just, and that comes on the back. It's just cumulative year after year. 2014, we had Hurricane Arthur. 15 was not a good year. 16, we had three named storms ending up with Matthew. 17, we had obviously low prices. And then this year, our farmers are just slammed. I mean, we're going to lose a lot of farmers if we don't get some help. And that's what I told, that's what I told our legislature yesterday. Our farmers in bad, bad financial shape, and many of them. And I can tell you what we're doing now. It's the fall of the year. This is not a harvest season. This is a salvage operation that we have going on.
Oh, man. Okay. Well, in front of Hurricane Florence, saw the videos and pictures and the social media reports out there of guys getting out there and getting after that corn crop as quickly as they could. They got some of that corn crop harvested. But, Larry, if 100% of the soybean crop was still out there in the field, I mean, this is going to change up the flow of commodities into and out of the Southeast for months to come.
Well, it could. I don't know yet. Of course, we're not the largest producer of soybeans. I don't know the exact acreage this year. But all those soybeans, certainly didn't go underwater. Many of them will be harvestable. If they were flooded, then, you have to just combine around those flooded areas. I can tell you, it's not hard to tell now where the water stood. You don't have to worry about knowing which ones were underwater, which ones are not. I mean, the ones who are not are either green or beginning to lose their leaves. Those that went underwater are black. You don't have to worry about that. I mean, that's pretty distinguishable from a pickup truck or a combine seat. Yeah. I mean, there's no question about that.
Okay.
But we'll just have to see what the impact is. But we know that our farmers are suffering out there in this environment we're in right now, and obviously they're talking pretty strong about this Hurricane Michael coming up through the Gulf Coast, coming in, putting another 5 or 6 inches of water. And our peanut guys and sweet potato guys are trying to salvage that. They just don't need that for sure.
Right, right. Okay, I'm talking to you from Iowa. Obviously, a lot of the listeners up in this part of the world are interested in what happened to the hog industry down in North Carolina. You said that some of the poultry houses had 3 foot of water in them. How did the pork industry come out of it?
The pork industry did great. I couldn't be more proud of our farmers. They had pumped down those lagoons. They do it every year in anticipation, knowing that hurricane season comes. They had pumped down their lagoons. They pre-positioned feed across the flood-prone areas in many cases. They had generators. Almost all of our hog and poultry operations have generators there to run those feeding operations as well as water. We had some had some problems, but let me just say this, out of 3,100 lagoons, we only had three that what we call breached, that the dams broke and they dumped, which is no problem. And then we had others that they were inundated by the rivers or whatever. I had one farmer call me and say, Larry, how about calling the governor and our Department of Environmental Quality and tell them to come down here and get their river out of my lagoon?
In other words,
his lagoon was in good shape, but the state's river got in his lagoon. So, I couldn't be more proud. And to lose only 5,500 hogs out of about 12 million we have here in the state on the ground at any one time was nothing short of a miracle. And I just can't say enough good about it. And for anybody that's out there trying to make political hay or raise money, in many cases on any problems with lagoons, I think is just incredulous. And I can't say enough bad about that. What our farmers need, they did a tremendous job. What our farmers need are their help and their support, not criticism and being a bunch of Monday morning quarterbacks.
Exactly. Good on you, Larry. So what is the recovery, or like you called it, the salvage operation? What does it look like right now? What do you need right now?
What we need right now is just some dry weather, and let's sort this out, see where we are. Let's get the rest of these. Of course, the tobacco's finished. These guys with these big combines, the corn was blown over, but, they have the reels to get that in, that what was left out there. The soybeans, I think, could be in pretty good shape, except for those that went underwater. They'll just have to cut around those. If whole fields went underwater, then that's a crop insurance claim. Our peanuts, they're digging those. We'll see what any problems are. The sweet potatoes, with all the water they had, they're going to have the storability of those sweet potatoes are certainly in question right now. People say, well, didn't our farmers have crop insurance? Yes, they had crop insurance on all the insurable crops, but there's no crop insurance. There's no multi-peril crop insurance for sweet potatoes. And I can tell you, as you know, Chip, crop insurance is not 100%. And it's not designed for back-to-back-to-back, year-after-year disaster, because your APH continues to go down and your payments get less. And so it's just been a tough few years for North Carolina agriculture here in terms of these disasters. But we're going to survive. We're going to go again, and we're going to still be the $84, $85 billion a year industry that we have been in this state.
Very cool. Very cool. So what at Farm Bureau, what are you doing for your members down there right now, Larry?
Well, we've received some Bayer Crop Science gave us $100,000 to go in our Florence Relief Fund. Duke Energy gave another $100,000 to go in our Florence Relief Fund. Other state farm bureaus, county farm bureaus, individuals, we're going to be working with our Department of Agriculture and finding ways to take that money to help farms and farm families. We've gone to the legislature yesterday and asked for a $250 million state appropriation to help our farmers overcome some of this, in addition to the federal response. So we're Farm Bureau, as well as our commissioner, department, and others, we're making the case. Our farmers don't need loans. They've got all the loans they can handle. They need help so they can pay operating loans from this year and years back so they can farm again. We don't need to lose a generation of farmers, and that's what's going to happen if help doesn't come. The younger guys, that 35 to 45 age group, who don't have the equity, they're going to be forced out of this thing if something's not done to help them.
Larry, good luck to you. It was good to hear what's going on down there on the ground, but boy, I sure feel bad. Good luck to you.
Thank you so very much. Appreciate your call, and call us anytime.
All right, that's Larry Wooten, president of the North Carolina Farm Bureau.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Control your destiny in a challenging dairy industry at Farm Journal Media's Milk Business Conference, November 5th through the 7th in Las Vegas. Walk away with a competitive edge from insights on market trends and innovative ideas to optimize your dairy business. Register today to network with fellow dairy owners at milkbusinessconference.com.
Prepare for the future of ag technology at Farm Journal Media's Ag Tech Expo, December 3rd through the 5th in Indianapolis. Whether you're a novice or a tech-savvy early adapter, Ag Tech is your go-to source for the latest in the industry. Customize your event experience and gain a competitive edge with more than 25 educational breakout sessions focused on precision ag, using data, machinery and iron, and sustainable technology. Grower and retailer registrations only $99. Sign up today at www.farmjournalagtechexpo.com.
Welcome to No Man's Land, a new podcast from U.S. Farm Report host Tyne Morgan.
Bacon is the gateway for a lot of people who are vegetarian.
That has to sink into our listeners. Bacon is the gateway meat.
I invite you to join me each week as I shine a spotlight on powerful women in agriculture while empowering all women in agriculture, going where no man has gone before.
No Man's Land with Tyne Morgan is available where you access your favorite podcasts, iTunes, Google Play, and now the new AgriTalk app.
Current price times 1,000 acres, carry the one.
These days, it's hard to make the math work for your soybean fields. The BASF Liberty Link system with Liberty Herbicide makes it easier. Start with a 2-plus bushel per acre yield advantage. Add in lower system input costs and more complete weed control, and you get an extra $33 or more profit potential per acre compared to Asgrow Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Grow smart with Liberty Link and BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Hi there. I'm an off-brand tractor battery, and you can buy me online or at the auto parts store pretty cheap. But I'll warn you, I don't have much of a work ethic. Yeah, and when it's cold outside, I may not keep a charge. But don't worry, before long, it'll be time to replace me anyway. Hopefully you're not planning anything important that day.
Off-brand batteries are not Strongbox batteries. Strongbox batteries are engineered by John Deere and last up to 8 times as long. Don't risk it with anything less.
Time now for an industry spotlight. With me is Carl Butenhoff, Channel Technical Agronomist, and we're talking about the Protexas corn line. Carl, weather is the big factor when it comes to corn diseases out in the field. So how do we know if we're going to need this product or not?
That's why we're really excited about the Protexas lineup of corn. The environment is so unpredictable, and we can't know if we're going to have a certain disease year in and year out. And I kind of relate it to our growers purchasing crop insurance. We don't know if we're going to get a wind event or a hail event, but we purchase crop insurance as a risk management strategy to make sure we're protecting our bottom line. And really, Protexas is a similar risk management strategy as we look at unpredictable environmental conditions and disease pressure year to year.
So let me ask you this then, is Protexas corn line for everyone?
No, like I said, it protects against the 5 key diseases, but that doesn't mean that a grower might have those 5 diseases in his field. So he might be concerned just about anthracnose stock rot, for example, and we may have a product outside of the Protexis lineup that provides better level of protection just against anthracnose stock rot, but maybe not as good a protection against some of the other diseases. And in a case like that, absolutely, we would recommend that the grower choose a product that best fits his field that may be outside the Protexis portfolio. So we offer those elite genetics, whether they're in the Protexis portfolio or not.
All right. I've been talking with Carl Butenhoff. He is Channel Technical Agronomist. This industry spotlight is brought to you by Channel. Learn more from your local Channel seedsman or channel.com.
Our name says it all. AgriTalk. Any questions?
Here with another episode of John Deere Lead TV. I'm with Scott Shadler. We're in a demonstration plot talking about corn residue. Yep. What are we looking at here in this plot?
So in this demonstration, what we're trying to show is the importance of not only sizing the residue, which you hear in a lot of the industry today that's typically finer than better, but we also want growers to think about its positioning in the residue. At the combine, at harvest, before that next step, Tillage Task Force could be their planting task. For example, if they're in a no-till situation or even a strip-till situation, really what we want to look at is between the rows, you can see that there's a lot more bare ground. And what the combine is doing in some cases is actually putting that residue on top of the current corn row and separating the residue for that next future corn row.
Yeah, and so you can come right in with your no-till, plant in between the rows, you're good to go, or even strip-till.
Yep, exactly. Yep, and in some cases, that may not be the solution for that grower. Then maybe a chopping corn head with the stalk rows may be a better option if they're in a conventional tillage situation.
Have you got anything for them today?
Yep, we do. Let's walk over here and check it out.
All right.
So in this demonstration here, what we've done is we've actually harvested these rows with a chopping corn head. So it puts the pieces of residue much smaller than what we saw in the previous demonstration. So what we do with this chopping corn head is basically we're trying to get an even distribution of that residue. Then we come in with that conventional tillage pass that'll bury that residue beneath that seed zone.
So what's the biggest takeaways, you think, from the research that you did here in this demonstration?
So what we're trying to look at is what, in a lot of cases, that combine is the fourth quarter, kind of the end game of this crop year. But really, in essence, what that combine is the first pass for next year's crop. And that's really what we want them to start thinking about, is not only sizing the residue, but positioning it for that next pass in the field.
Thank you, Pam, very much. And that sets us up for a great conversation, thinking about what we can do in the field right now to prepare for next year. Let's bring in Caitlin Bissonette, plant pathologist at the University of Missouri. Caitlin, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm pretty good. How about yourself, Chip?
Doing just fine, just fine. Caitlin, you're down at the University of Mizzou, but you're also involved with the Soybean Cyst Nematode Coalition. What's your role there?
So with the Soybean Cyst Nematode Coalition, my role is really to talk to growers, especially in my state, about some of the issues that we're facing with soybean cyst nematode management.
Okay, very cool. Now, it's that time of the year. Farmers, in the Western Corn Belt, priority one is to get that crop out of the field and get it out as quickly as we can. But we can't lose track of things that need to be done in the fall of the year to get ready for next year. When they're out there doing a soil test, Caitlin, are they also getting a test for SCN?
When they're actually collecting a soil sample for fertility testing, that's actually ideal to also collect along with it a soil sample for SCN testing. That can be sent to any number of SCN testing labs. There are numerous states that actually offer free SCN sampling testing. You can check with your local soybean board to see if your state actually has that. But yes, sampling when you're doing fertility testing is ideal because you're already out in the field, and splitting that sample and sending part off for SCN testing is good.
Okay, so you do have to run a separate test for SCN. It's free in a lot of states, but if there is a cost involved, Caitlin, I mean, when you compare it to the potential losses out there in the field, even if it does cost a buck or two an acre, it's got to be worth it, isn't it?
It is definitely worth it. You're losing potentially 10 to 20 bushels per acre with SCN, whereas you're only paying $1 to $2 an acre to get that SCN test.
Yeah, and why, you know, it seems like SCN testing and SCN control, it's becoming more of a hot button issue, Caitlin. Is it because the soybean cyst has made a kind of a comeback out there in the field?
SCN has never actually gone away. For a long time, we've been using resistant varieties to combat SCN, and it was more of a passive management. I'm going to select an SCN-resistant variety, but now the SCN is becoming resistant to the resistance, which means that SCN-resistant varieties are not as effective as they once were, so we really need to look at active management strategies.
Yeah, got to get more active with it, no doubt about it. What areas of the fields, Caitlin, might be most vulnerable to SCN?
Areas where you'd want to sample for soybean cyst nematode, especially in a field where maybe you haven't detected it before, would be in field entryways, areas with high pH, areas that may have flooded this year, other low spots, and especially in consistently low-yielding areas.
Okay, yeah. And like I said, priority one over here in the Western Belt is going to be getting the crop out of the field, but we can't lose track of this, can we, Caitlin? It's important to test.
It is very important to test. And something else to note, if you cannot get into your field to soil test this fall, it is also okay to sample in the spring, but fall is the ideal time, so try your best to get out there.
Well, yeah, especially if you're making your seed selection in the fall or winter for next year, you want to make sure that you're putting the right varieties out there, correct?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And rotating those resistant varieties is going to be key as well, not planting the same one next year as you planted this year.
Yeah. How many varieties do carry some resistance to SCN? A fair number?
A fair number of varieties. Actually, in the Midwestern states in particular, there's about 95% of all varieties have resistance to SCN with a particular gene group from PI88788.
Gotcha. Caitlin, thank you so much for the update. It's an important issue, something that guys need to stay on top of. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Caitlin Bissonette, plant pathologist at the University of Missouri, and obviously representing the Soybean Cyst Nematode Coalition here on AgriTalk. Okay, guys, thanks for joining us today. Thanks to Jeff Cooper from RFA and to Larry Wooten from the North Carolina Farm Bureau for joining us. Come back this afternoon for AgriTalk After the Bell. Davis Michelson and I will have all the details of the crop production and the supply and demand reports that are about to be released from USDA. And tomorrow morning on AgriTalk, we're going to be broadcasting live from Central Campus right outside of Curtis Hall at Iowa State University. The Farm Journal College Roadshow is back on the road. We're going to have a great time down in Ames tomorrow. Y'all have a good day. This is AgriTalk.
They say to really know a man, you have to walk a mile in his boots. Well, my channel Seedsman has logged more miles than I can count in mine. As crops grow, so does his commitment to making sure there's nothing overlooked. And come harvest, we celebrate in the cab. Him working away, making plans for next season. Look, anybody can sell you seed. Only a Channel Seedsman gives you everything you need to make the most of it. Find yours at channel.com/boots.
In farming, getting things done early has a way of setting you up for success. Like using Corvus for an early season win over weeds. Corvus keeps even the toughest weeds from gaining a foothold. Multiple sites of action deliver superior control of emerged weeds. And later, Corvus reactivates with just a half inch of rain to take out any new weeds that may have sprouted. So get an early season win against weeds with Corvus for end of season rewards.
Always read and follow label instructions. Corvus is a restricted-use pesticide.
Thanks to Acuron Corn Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your retailer about upgrading your weed control with Acuron. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide.